we release a early warning risk list every year, and South Sudan has been in our top 20 for years, and currently this year, the U.S. Holocaust Museum Simon Scott Center is ranking South Sudan as 16th highest in the world to have a new event of a mass killing of civilians. And when we started to look into it, we have found four primary drivers that is driving risk of mass killing of civilians in the future. So these four overarching elements right now and factors of South Sudan, the armed conflict, the discrimination and ethnic discrimination in politics, the impunity and the humanitarian situation are the primary drivers that we see.
And the brief also says in the lead up to this future, which you fear, and you did mention that's not inevitable, that tension is increasing at the national level. What do you think is causing that?
With the combination of the four elements I just said, on the backdrop of the country preparing for a national election, is definitely going to be consuming the entire nation. There's also folks that are steeped in the activities and tracking the activities of the militia and the clashes between various militias and opposition forces and the federal government that are happening on a possible three fronts right now in three different parts of the country. So it definitely has a national reach, this insecurity and this instability to civilians nationwide, because it's all on the backdrop of the country preparing, or at least on a calendar, being ready to have elections at some point soon at the national level for its next president.
It's interesting that you mentioned elections, but also there's a process that has been going on. Only 2 days ago, it was announced that the screening of various forces had been completed, and they're preparing the unification of forces belonging to different parties of the peace agreement. But your report says the unification process, as well as the anticipated elections, may also be sources of conflict that may lead to the commission of human rights atrocities against civilians. Please explain that part to me.
So on paper, the unification of the forces makes sense. If you look at a peace agreement, you can't have two armed actors not under one unified command. You have a peace agreement, you have one government, you have one federal government, you should have one federal force. But in reality, they're pushing various forces together of opposition and federal forces, who their leadership hasn't even resolved the conflict between the opposition and the current government. By forcing this, even though it's on paper and it's agreed to, it's going to bring all of these pre-existing tensions and unresolved conflicts to a head. And as we've seen in the past, once you get close to actually really forcing these troops together, forcing these armed actors together, tensions build, and they have on occasion boiled over. In particular, they boiled over in Juba in 2016, and it resulted in lots of looting, lots of killing, and lots of human rights violations. Where when the forces were clashing, then they take it out on the communities that represent their ethnicity of the forces.
What about elections, which are encouraged by the international community, but also agreed to by the parties to the peace agreement? And officials have been on the record recently promising to hold elections in 2023. And that's supposed to be a hope to stem violence and offer the young nation a fresh beginning. How can it be a source of worry or conflict?
The elections will be a source of conflict if they're not done, if they're not organized transparently, if it's truly not a way in which all actors and political parties, and frankly, even civilians, like there's a whole new generation that wants to take a part in their civic life and have a active part in their development and the course in the future of their country. So elections can be a wonderful and beautiful thing if they're credible, if they're transparent, and if it's secure for people to actually participate. There's no guarantees, and it doesn't seem like the structures are in place. And the commission, we hope that there's a credible and unbiased electoral commission that can put all these measures in place to make sure that everybody can vote, including those that are displaced, including those that are in areas that might not be voting in favor of the current government, and including people who are outside the country and are refugees, but are citizens of this country.
And your report lays out recommendations. So what should be done to avoid the imminent risk of mass atrocities against civilians that you speak of?
Yes. Well, overall, we have specific, I would really refer your listeners to the specific recommendations that we have for all the actors involved. I mean, first and foremost, for the parties to the conflict, they have to quit killing their civilians. This has gone on for decades in South Sudan. There is a tolerance of violence that is unacceptable, and we have to hold those accountable who are committing violence against civilians. And then within the frame of who's involved, we have regional actors like the African Union and IGAD, as well as the South Sudanese government. All these entities are working on a peace agreement that has yet to fully be implemented. But also, where is the prioritization of implementing the parts of the peace agreement that would really make the average citizen's life better? And then many parts of that is in Chapter 5, where it talks about compensation for victims. It talks about a truth and reconciliation and healing commission that is really credible and accessible to all. It talks about a court of justice that the African Union is supposed to be supporting with the South Sudanese government. And all of these things have been delayed or obstructed or sidelined for other parts of the peace agreement.